Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Welcome back to Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, you can email us science@newstalk.com. You can tweet us, we're @NewstalkScience. Now, how do you get a satellite to steer itself through space with precision? Ireland's first satellite, AirSat 1, has just nailed that using a brand new control system developed right here in Ireland at UCD. We're joined now by Dr. David McKeown, Assistant Professor at the UCD Centre for Space Research. He joins us now. David, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. Thanks.
People, when we talk about like moving things through space, like people think it's fairly straightforward, right? But that when you start to think about like moving a satellite, like when we run, we have to push off the ground to run. And when we're in space, it's like those, it's like a cartoon, like, blah, 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 you know, like there's no, you've no traction. How do you move things around in space? Like, how does a thruster work in space?
Yeah, so you need a force. And like you say, on the ground, we just push off, you know, the floor or steps or whatever we're doing. In space, we have a few things. We can either have thrusters, like you say. We put out some material and then do conservation of momentum. You push one way, it does reaction against you. That's not how we do with AirSat. For AirSat, we used the Earth's magnetic field. Okay, so the Earth's a magnet, and our spacecraft, we can turn that into a magnet as well. So if you put electricity through coils, you get an electromagnet. And if you do that in a particular way, that you push or pull against the Earth's magnetic field, then you can orientate your satellite in space. So that's how we do it. So it's very low force. If you kind of think of like a compass needle going around, that's reacting to the Earth's magnetic field, but it's not a really strong thing. But because there's no friction, you're basically almost in a vacuum up there, you can rotate the spacecraft. And if you do it in a clever way, with an algorithm, a control system, you can precisely, hopefully, orientate your satellite.
That's really cool. If you've ever listened to this program, you know, electricity is my krypton. I understand lots of other fundamental ideas around science, electricity and how you can turn magnetism into electricity and how electricity can travel down a wire and then turn on a light. Or move. I don't get it. But this using of the magnet, has that been done before?
Yeah, so it's a common way. This is a magnet torquer.
Magnet torquer.
That's what it's called.
So you can
get a torque, which is a rotational force from a magnetic field. So that's your actuator. And you have sensors. You need to be able to sense things to know where you are in space. So that's the other half of it. So we have magnetometers and gyroscopes, which are the things in your phone.
Yeah.
You know when you rotate your phone and it flips the screen the right way. Basically, we have those sensors on the satellite. That and the sun sensor, so we know where the sun is. And those three pieces of information, we can kind of figure out where we are. Then we have to know where do we want to go to. We want to point at something, maybe at the sun for solar power generation, or point at the Earth, take a picture, or do something like this. So you have that error between where you are and where you want to go to, and you drive that error down to zero by turning on your magnet torquers to apply the force. But you want a bit of mats in between. You want a control system so you don't overshoot or go unstable. Do that in
because if you start turning, right, you're going to keep turning unless you have a way of stopping turning.
Exactly. So if you apply
it's space.
A force, yeah, to go one way and then a force to stop, and how you turn them on and off in a kind of automatic way, because the satellite's doing this itself. We upload the code and the satellite does that. So it's not us with a joystick on the ground because it's, you know, we only get to communicate with the satellite twice a day.
Yeah.
So it has to be using the sensor
because it's like. Because sensitive?
Because it only goes over Dublin twice a day.
Oh, right.
Right, so it goes over in the morning and later on. Okay, there's a small delay going up. It's a kind of a small data link as well.
Right.
So it's more like your kind of 90s modem internet kind of.
That's so cool. So using the Earth's magnetic field, you use what? A battery presumably inside it. It's too small for some sort of a solar array of any worth, is it? Or does it have a solar array as well?
Solar array's on the outside, charging the battery on the inside. So it's a battery it's lithium polymer. It's just like your laptop or your phone. And it gets charged up when it sees the sun. The solar panels are all on the sides. So how we actually orientate the satellite gets how much sun is getting on our solar panels. So if we want to charge up our batteries more, we can orientate our satellite in a particular way that it's charging, and that's useful to us.
So that is awesome, because we're talking about Ireland's first ever satellite. We're talking about Ireland's first ever satellite, and a huge part of it is your involvement in it, David. So it must be really, really awesome. Is the research that's been done in it now, isn't it cool what we can also do, or is there something novel about the research that actually that adds to the, you know, because that sounds like I'm almost talking down. It's an amazing achievement, right? But like, Can a small satellite like AirSat 1 actually do new research?
Yeah, so it's testing, and I've been kind of avoiding the real technical stuff, but a Lyapunov controller. So Lyapunov, it's the name of a guy who did the maths, right?
Okay.
So it's a base, been working with Carnegie Mellon University at developing this. So it's a new way. There hasn't been able to people to, as precisely, just using the magnetorquers, control the satellite. The nice thing about using magnetorquers is really low power. If you're using thrusters, you have to bring liquids and fuels up there or other things. So it's a really nice way of doing this. And it's really hard to test things unless you go to space, right? Because we do have turntables and fake magnetic fields in our lab, and we do test this on the ground. But the full test of it, to be sure that it's working, you have to build a spacecraft and put it up there.
Yeah.
So one, we're training all the students that now can develop this kind of thing. So simulation, test, and then go into space.
Which is awesome.
And now we look at the more complicated problem. So we know that works, and then we build upon that. So we're going to look at optical communication links, which is laser link between satellite and the ground. So you have a laser beam coming from your satellite talking to a ground station, and you might imagine that has to be very accurate, right? Because if you're off by a tiny bit of a degree, you're going to miss your ground station on the ground. So we have a new project coming up with Embryonics, which is a Galway-based company that makes this kind of optical terminal, the laser link.
The stuff they do is absolutely jaw-dropping. There's a company down in Galway. What? The stuff they do is unreal. Like, it's real next-level stuff. It's like bouncing lasers off this off space. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so between spacecraft, between the ground and spacecraft, we're talking about terabits per second links of data going up and down. It's much more secure. You can do quantum encryption if you want. So it's a way of
saying... I would always want, just in case you're asking. That just default me with quantum encryption.
Of course. And part of that, the steadier you can make your satellite, then the narrower the beam that you can have, and then the more data you can send.
Right, okay, because it's fuzzy if it's wide, if it's narrow and focused, it's high power.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So you can still do stuff with this satellite, because it's small, right? What was the size of it again?
Yeah, it's 20 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters, so kind of a bit bigger than a milk carton. So that's why it says three payloads kind of squeezed into it. So it's small compared to a Sky Sports satellite or something up there. I guess this is a new space and allows universities to build things around this size. So we can test in the lab. We couldn't test something that was much bigger than
this. And so the life of this particular satellite, how long is it going to stick around for? How much more research can you do with it? Or is it going to stay up there forever in orbit?
No, we're nearly there. So we went up in December 2023, and it's coming down in probably the next week or two.
What?
I know.
Oh, my God, you're joking.
I'm not joking. Nothing we can do about that. It's Newton's laws. So up there in space, Damn Newton, doing it again. We put it up at just above 500 kilometers. It's down to 300 kilometers. And even though you can't really think vacuum in space, there's tiny little bits of atmosphere, which is drag, and like drag slows the satellite down. And that.
Can you not use these magnetorques?
Magnetorques, we can rotate our satellite, so we can point at different things in space, but we can't go up or down.
And the magnetorques that you have, that technique, can that be used on bigger satellites? I guess because there's no friction, you could still use it, right? Do you need bigger magnets and bigger fields to move bigger things?
So you generally, for bigger things and more precise, you use something called reaction wheels, which are big spinning discs. So you spin up a disc really fast. And again, another conservation of angular momentum.
We're getting so much physics, but it's all Newton stuff. So this is where it's not going past Newton.
Basically, you spin something up one way, then the spacecraft goes the other way, because it has to conserve this momentum. So we have these wheels with motors and freedom.
Right.
And that's how you would generally move them around. Our next satellite will probably use something like that.
Our next satellite?
Well, we're developing new payloads. So we're working on, we have a National Space Subsystems and Payload Initiative. We're working with six Irish companies, building up payloads and building around missions around that.
Oh, cool.
My colleagues in physics have another gamma ray burst detector, two gamma ray burst detectors, one called GIFS, which is a 6U, which is three times bigger than AirSat, and one is hopefully going to be a constellation of many. So first starting with two in space, hopefully, and then moving to 20-something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this first satellite wasn't that was a nice thing to test. This is like the first of many, it sounds like.
Well, that was the goal. Yeah. The goal wasn't just to do it and go, that was pretty nice. So, yeah.
Well, it is great that it didn't, like, you know, the Irish satellite. You can imagine if the Irish satellite had failed, we would have been a world, It would have been a punchline. No, the Irish put a satellite in space and it came straight back down. Like that, that actually, reputationally, I actually had never contemplated what a big reputational risk for the entire country was in your hands, David.
I was never worried. So it was,
it's but that's the problem. It's often the people who aren't worried.
No, well, actually, I mean, the majority, I'd say, of first satellites for any country fail. And AirSat has been unbelievably successful. That doesn't sound humble, but it's kind of achieved all its mission goals.
It's one of my greatest achievements.
It's good, but I wouldn't say it's surprising, but it's actually been quite a trouble-free mission. We've detected gamma ray bursts with our detector. We have this control system. We have materials payload. We've got data back from everything. It's been working for 18 months, and now it's going to come down and we'll say bye.
When are we going to get a defense shield in space?
I'm not going to be working on that
dome.
One. Not working on
defense
that one.
Defense dome.
Yeah, I think we could do it. We need more than just one.
Like, are you going to have a watch it fall party? Because obviously it was a launch party, and that must have been very exciting to see it launch in California. Having the excitement of seeing, you know, your satellite going up into space. What was that like?
Oh, nah. It was surreal, absolutely mental. So we were, I mean, 6 years building it at that stage. And then you're kind of standing in a field watching this rocket go up into the sky. It's just eerie. It's just kind of like to think that your thing is on that and it's heading up into space.
As an engineer, I know you're not capable of emotions, but did you have something adjacent to emotions?
There was people crying and hugging, and I understood that.
So like, I presume when it goes, you won't really know, because you only see the satellite twice, right? It'll just be...
Yeah, it sends out a beacon every minute, and it gets picked up from ground stations around the world. So we do hear little heartbeats every now and again.
Oh my God, stop. I'm very emotional. I'm unlike you. I can feel emotions.
But we communicated in the morning and at night when it comes over Dublin. We also have a ground
station. Same with me and my wife.
Sometime we just won't hear from it anymore. And it'll burn up completely in the atmosphere and come down. So we won't, it's not going to land, or some people ask, you're going to get it back, but we won't.
You're not going to see, like in the movie, there'd be like a charred badge of, you know, saying AirSat and a little hunk of twisted metal. It's going to completely and utterly disintegrate.
Yeah, it's small.
Why is that?
Well, just the heat coming back through the atmosphere. So it's the heat that will generate as it comes through will be higher than the melting point of all our metals on board. So it just vaporizes.
Like when you do it, like, this is probably, I mean, I would say it may not be your area of expertise, but when you're going to the toilet in a plane, do they like just flush and it just disintegrates in the same way?
I don't think that works the same way. I think they just put that out over the oceans, right? And it just goes into the sea.
Dude, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it doesn't vaporize.
No, people don't talk about planes enough. So, more spacecraft happening.
Yeah.
What does that mean for UCD? Like, obviously, you know, it's great to have this happening. Is there a building momentum? Is funding coming in? Are you getting to build something where, you know, you've had so many students go through, you know, this program and have it, you know, help them go to the universities they want to go to or start careers? You've got a real proof of concept here. Is UCD going to build this sort of capacity and really build on it?
Yeah, so I mean, the next project have 7.9 million worth of funding through this Disruptive Technology Innovation Fund.
And your shoes, don't give that away at all.
I don't get any of that. But that's
clearly
build. Thanks. That's allowed us build test equipment. So it's stuff that we would have, for AirSat, we would have went to Belgium and tested our satellite. So we're getting some of that equipment into my lab. So a thermal vacuum chamber, which mimics space, and shakers so we can mimic launch. So we're bringing those testing facilities in-house into UCD. Trying to build the next payloads, which then we develop missions around. So yeah, my team has grown from, you know, one or two to 10, and we have, you know, lots of, you know, and it's those people that all did the smart work. I just come on News Talk and talk about the successes, but a great team doing the work.
Well, I've known you for many years. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. It's amazing to hear of the success and the things coming. And I have to go and check out some of these cool machines when they land, particularly the shaker. I want to stand on the shaker.
I'll give you a go to shaker.
Did the earth move for you, et cetera, et cetera. Dr. David McKeown from UCD's AirSat program, assistant professor at the UCD Center for Space Research. Thanks very much. Your comments on that, but please, you can email us, science@newstalk.com, or tweet us, we're @newstalkscience. And particularly if you if you feel, you know, that there's someone in your household who might be interested in working in space or does work in space, we'd like to hear from you.
Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Sundays from midday on News Talk.